It is Wednesday, May 4th in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Lori London. Glad you could be with us today. Coming up, Donald Trump underestimated no more after a huge victory in Indiana. The International Coalition vows to ramp up efforts to fight the Islamic State group. A history-making cruise into Cuba and what it means going forward.
This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity.
Yeah, also ahead, it is not international holiday, but it is intergalactic. It's all on today's International Edition.
We're going to start winning again, and we're going to win bigly.
When Donald Trump entered the Republican presidential race, national polls showed him trailing a large group of seasoned politicians. But on Tuesday night, he completed a 10-month march through them all and set up a likely general election matchup with former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton. And there were some other surprises in Indiana. Here to sort it all out with us is VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Jim, lots of surprises, nonetheless, that Texas Senator Ted Cruz decided to bow out despite vowing to fight to the end.
Was kind of abrupt. Ted Cruz had staked his campaign, though, in Indiana. It's the kind of voters that he has great appeal to, and I think he must have felt that once that didn't work, once he saw Trump romp to victory in Indiana, the handwriting was on the wall. Republicans want an outsider this year. They've made that clear from the beginning. And in Cruz's defense, he was one of the last people standing in Donald Trump's way.
But then we've got John Kasich.
John Kasich apparently leaving the race as well. The field is now left to Donald Trump. Who would have thought back in June of last year when he announced the unlikeliest of all the Republican nominees, he is now the Republican nominee in waiting.
And despite that, though, he really does still have a bit of work to do, doesn't he, with his own party?
Let's see, 70% negative approval ratings with women voters in the United States. Yeah, that means a lot of work to do. Here's the way this is looking, though. His opponent, likely opponent, Hillary Clinton, the Democratic frontrunner, she also has high negatives. This is starting to look like a race where whoever has the higher negatives is going to be the loser. And it's also looking like a very negative campaign. Not that we haven't seen that already, especially on the Republican side.
Oh yeah, it will be ugly. I can almost bet that. But we're talking about the Democratic side. Bernie Sanders eked out a win Tuesday, but he says he is not going anywhere despite the fact that Clinton is way ahead in delegates.
This is an issue for the Clinton campaign. I mean, Bernie Sanders is hanging in there. He raises a lot of money. He has a fervent following, especially some of the voters that Hillary Clinton will need in November, independents and young people. He does very well with those groups. Sanders, every time he wins, he's fueled to stay in the race. What's the problem there? Well, for Clinton, she really wants to wrap up the Democratic nomination as soon as possible and shift her focus to Donald Trump. The longer she is entangled with Sanders, the more difficult it is to come away. But she's got to do it carefully because she wants his supporters.
So do you really believe he will take it all the way to a contested and try to have a contested?
The next few states that are going to vote look like pretty good Sanders territory. It's likely he'll stay in the race all the way through the California primary on June 7th. What does he want? He probably cannot mathematically win the nomination. He may want influence over the platform, even on a Clinton administration, should she become elected. So this dance between Bernie Sanders and Hillary Clinton is very important for the Democratic Party if they're going to go into the election united so they can take on a very unpredictable Donald Trump.
And we are going to continue to watch it every step of the way. Thanks so much for your insights, VOA national correspondent Jim Malone. Well, the internet has been exploding after Tuesday's Indiana primary. And here to talk more about what's happening in the Twitterverse, VOA social media reporter Andrew Pralcheski. Tell us what you're hearing, Andrew.
Well, it started last night with this surprise announcement that Ted Cruz was dropping out of the race. A lot of his supporters, very dejected, really shocked, taken aback by this announcement. Unfortunately for Ted Cruz, when he went after he spoke to try to hug his wife, he accidentally kind of elbowed her in the face. And that was the moment that Twitter really seized on, just the GIFs being played over and over and over again of him accidentally hitting her in the face. So can't win, really.
Not a good way to end your campaign.
Not a good way for him to end his campaign. And then, of course, the news now that John Kasich appears to be suspending his campaign. Kasich is now a trending topic in Twitter. But also trending just now, hashtag dropout Hillary. This seems to be the Bernie supporters jumping on these two announcements from Cruz and Kasich and saying, okay, we got these two guys out of the race. Let's get Hillary out of the race as well. And we're seeing a lot of these moments happen in social media where supporters will jump on these news items and say, okay, let's make that part of our campaign, or let's try to fit that to our message.
And Andrew, there are some people who are saying they'll be moving to another country if their candidate doesn't win. But what about another galaxy? After all, it is May 4th, right?
A galaxy far, far away. Hashtag May the 4th be with you, also known as Star Wars Day because it's May 4th. Used over 575,000 times on Twitter, and we're seeing everything from favorite movie moments to people dressing up their pets as Star Wars characters to, I even saw some companies trying to sell handbags. They put Photoshopped handbags into the sky. I don't know if that's really going to work, but everybody's jumping on this. It just speaks to how popular these movies are, but also what a big moneymaker they are, especially the new one that just came out, all of the merchandising and DVDs and on-demand sales. It's making people a lot of money, so people are seizing on it.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Andrew. You can follow him on Twitter at apow. We also invite you to follow the International Edition stream at VOA_IE. And here are some of the top stories we are following. Donald Trump's win in Indiana pushes Ted Cruz to abandon his presidential bid. The coalition vows to build up further against the Islamic State group. President Obama travels to Flint, Michigan to talk about tainted drinking water and assure federal help will continue. A massive wildfire forces the entire population of Canadian oil sands city, Fort McMurray, to evacuate. Expanded coverage of these stories and much more are on voanews.com or our VOA mobile app. This is International Edition. Fierce fighting in Syria continues, and in the past week, the city of Aleppo has seen some of its worst violence since the conflict began 5 years ago. Residential neighborhoods and another hospital were not spared in this latest escalation. An outraged U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry said there is no justification for the horrific violence that's targeting innocent civilians and medical facilities.
The cessation of hostilities was put in place precisely to give the people on the ground who are innocently caught between these warring factions some breather, some ability to be able to be safe. That is why we are working urgently right now to reaffirm the cessation of hostilities nationwide.
An international coalition leading the military campaign against the Islamic State in Syria and Iraq has to accelerate their contributions, according to Kerry. Now, let's talk more about the situation, particularly as it pertains to Syria, with VOA State Department correspondent Pam Dokken.
The fighting has been especially intense around Aleppo, Syria's largest city. In recent weeks, there's been an uptick. More than 280 civilians have been killed since late April. And, yes, hospitals are among the facilities that have been hit. Last week, the U.S. and other Western powers said it believed the Syrian regime was behind an airstrike that hit a hospital and left more than 50 people dead. And on Tuesday, Secretary of State Kerry said it appears a series of rocket strikes that are believed to have been carried out by rebels hit a hospital and other buildings.
Is there some sort of viable agreement in the works between the United States and its allies, as we're hearing?
Yes. It's part of a broader flurry of diplomatic activity that is underway. And the backdrop for all of this is that a February ceasefire is showing signs of unraveling. And also, there has not been any significant progress in the proximity talks between the government and the opposition. those two factors have spurred this diplomatic activity. One of the activities is that the U.S. and Russia are leading an effort to try to restore the cessation of hostilities. Secretary Kerry spoke about that effort on Tuesday, and he said teams have been working on a military-to-military basis. He also indicated there could be consequences for Syrian President Assad if he did not adhere to the ceasefire. Also, Russian Foreign Minister Lavrov has said he's urging the U.S. to put pressure on moderate rebels to get them to leave territories occupied by the Islamic State and al-Nusra extremists. Separately, a coalition of countries battling the Islamic State in Iraq and Syria met in Germany on Wednesday. U.S. Defense Secretary Ash Carter was there and told the group that all must do more to deal a blow to the Islamic State. And the French foreign minister has announced plans to invite other ministers to Paris next week, and the focal point would be looking at ways to support the Syrian opposition groups and also to breathe life into the political and military process in Syria.
It seems, though, a bit confusing when you hear that Russia is supporting the Assad regime and yet is on board with the U.S. in calling for the cessation.
Absolutely. Both Russia and the U.S. are part of the International Syria Support Group, and this is the group that backed the ceasefire that was announced in February, and also the group that crafted a plan that's supposed to lead to increased humanitarian aid going into Syria.
And you can read more about this story on our website at voanews.com. For the first time in nearly four decades, a U.S. cruise ship has docked in Havana, opening another chapter in revived U.S.-Cuban relations. The Carnival Cruise Line's Adonia and its 700 passengers left the port of Miami on Sunday and arrived in Cuba on Monday. It's another clear sign of those thawing relations. I talked about the impact with Rick Herrero, executive director of Cuba Now. Rick, thanks so much for being here. How big of a deal is this?
It's a huge deal. Let's keep in mind that in order for this to happen, Cuba had to change a longstanding policy prohibiting Cubans from being able to enter or exit the island via maritime. And this is a change that they announced just a little bit over a week ago, as a result of conversations that they had with Carnival Cruise Lines and the U.S. Embassy. So the fact that this cruise ship has arrived in Havana this week is the most concrete example we have to date of how normalized relations between the United States and Cuba is doing more to resolve differences between our countries and expand rights for Cuban people than our half-century-old policy of isolation.
Is this just the beginning of what we are likely to see now in the coming weeks and months ahead?
Well, it's a continuation. We've seen travel to Cuba start to expand rapidly, first in 2009 with the lifting of travel restrictions for Cuban-American families, then in 2011 with the lifting of certain restrictions on general American travel to Cuba, and now with further lifting of those restrictions as a result of the December 17th announcement that we are going to be normalizing relations, as well as now maritime travel. What we see with each one of these instances is that every time we open up a little bit more to allow more people to travel to Cuba, more folks want to travel to Cuba. Now it's going to be easier, so you're going to see a growing wave of Americans that are going to want to visit the island. At the same time, this is helping empower a whole new sector of entrepreneurs in the island who are going to be catering to that market, to that cruise ship travel market as they enter Havana Harbor.
How hard was it for Carnival Cruises to actually make this happen? Do you have any idea?
We know that they had been in negotiations with the Cubans for some time. We started opening up towards Cuba in December 17th as a result of the announcement that we're normalizing relations. Since then, there's been this wave of interest of American companies looking to gain a foothold in the island market. And the Cuban government has been very discerning in who it's agreed to allow in and who it has just continued to maintain conversations with. It's taken a while. There was an interest right from the beginning, but ultimately they were able to sign a deal with the Cubans during the president's visit back in March, in order to begin ferry travel to the island.
So this could probably be very good for tourism for U.S. citizens and for Cubans.
Absolutely. This is considered educational travel, not tourism per se. Everyone that's going on this voyage is going for some sort of educational purpose. I would argue that any visit to Cuba is always an educational experience because you learn a lot. Absolutely. This helps enrich the understanding of many of the folks from the United States who go and visit Cuba for the first time to understand that country, how that system works, how it is that we could have had a break in relations for 50 years. At the same time, it opens up a wealth of opportunities for very creative Cuban entrepreneurs, particularly in Havana, who now have an entire new industry that they could cater to for both peoples.
What do you say to folks who say this isn't a good idea? We still have human rights issues to deal with Cuba.
I would say that we can't expect everything in Cuba to change overnight. We have cruise ship travel and all sorts of travel to plenty of other countries with not so great human rights records. Also, no one has yet to present to me a clear argument for how allowing Cuba or prohibiting to go to Cuba. It undermines your position.
Perfect.
And does absolutely nothing to help improve conditions for Cubans on the island.
Well, it was great talking to you. I really appreciate it. Thanks so much.
Sure thing. My pleasure.
This is VOA.
News happens around the clock, and VOA brings you the latest at the top of each hour.
This is Joe Palkov.
I'm Victor Beatty.
Francis Alonso.
Tune in for a summary of the news at the top of each hour, around the clock on The Voice of America. Hourly newscasts on the radio and on the internet at voanews.com. VOA, a leader in news coverage for over 70 years.
News is mobile, and so are you. Get VOA on the go. Get VOA on Google Currents. Get VOA News specifically made for your tablet and smartphone. Clean, simple, fast. Now available for Android or Apple phones or tablets. Download the Google Currents app for free today. Get VOA on Google Currents at voanews.com/currents.
Country music superstar Martina McBride has a new CD coming out this week. It's called Reckless. It's her first album with a new record company. As International Edition's David Byrd tells us, this CD marks McBride's return to her country roots.
I'm reckless and senseless. I've jumped off the fences, abandoned all the rules, and crashed like a fool out.
Fans will know Martina McBride's huge voice from such hits as Wild Angels or Independence Day. The four-time Country Music Association Female Vocalist of the Year has sold 18 million albums in her 24-year-long career. But Reckless is a return to her country roots. It's her first album of country material in 5 years, and the title track is the first single released. McBride says that it speaks of a time in her life when she herself was reckless, but Martina found stability in the unconditional love of her husband, John.
But I think it's just about everybody will have their own story. You know, they'll have their own person who gives them that kind of love and who is reckless enough to love them no matter what. So I just think, I thought it was really a vulnerable lyric. I thought it was really a heartfelt lyric. I feel like it's an honest lyric, and I don't know, it just blew me away.
Martina McBride says she had a good feeling about the song. The 49-year-old says she also got some input from her daughters when it came time to pick tunes for the new CD.
They hear stuff, you know, from the demo stage all the way through the final finished record, and sometimes I'll say, what do you think of this song, or what do you think of this part that we did? Or I'll play them something, and, you know, I played Just Around the Corner for Emma when we were finished with it, and she just started crying, and it was like, it's a good sign.
This is Martina McBride's first CD with her new label, Nash Icon. Two of Nashville's most respected producers, Nathan Chapman and Dan Huff, produced the CD, and every song showcases McBride's powerful vocal range. Martina says that she felt comfortable working with the new label, and it shows in the final product.
I had a lot of time. With the one thing the new label did was give me a lot of time to make this record. They didn't put a deadline or a lot of pressure on getting it done. So I had a lot of time and patience to really find the right songs, wait for the right songs to come in, and that made a big difference, I think, too.
Martina McBride's new CD, Reckless, is on sale now in the United States. In Washington, I'm David Byrd. I know I'm reckless, but you must be reckless
too. Prince is being inducted into the Apollo Theater's Walk of Fame. Theater officials announced Wednesday that the late musician will join previous honorees such as Aretha Franklin and Michael Jackson when he is officially inducted during the Apollo's 11th annual Spring Gala on June 13th. The fundraising event will be hosted by LL Cool J. It's set to feature performances by the OJs, Leon Bridges, and Andra Day. The Apollo's Walk of Fame honorees receive a plaque beneath the theater's famous marquee in New York City. Well, that is going to do it for this edition of International Edition. We're glad you could join us. Tune in again tomorrow, same time, same place. You can also find us at voanews.com and like us on Facebook, VOA Now. Follow us on Twitter at VOA_IE. I'm Lori London in Washington. Have yourself a wonderful day.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
In Zimbabwe during 2015, the most important human rights problems remain the government's targeting of non-ZANU-PF parties and civil society activists for abduction, arrest, torture, abuse, and harassment. Partisan application of the rule of law by security forces and the judiciary, and restrictions on civil liberties. These are the findings of the U.S. Department of State in its recently released country report on human rights practices around the world. The report notes that Zimbabwe had many other human rights problems. Prison conditions were harsh. The government's expropriation of private property continued. Executive political influence and interference in the judiciary continued, and the government infringed on citizens' privacy rights. The government generally failed to investigate or prosecute state security or ZANU-PF supporters responsible for violence. Authorities restricted freedoms of speech, press, assembly, association, and movement. The government continued to evict citizens, invade farms, private businesses and properties, and demolish informal marketplaces and settlements. The government also arrested, detained, prosecuted, and harassed non-governmental organization members. Government corruption remained widespread, including at the local level. Violence and discrimination against women, child abuse, trafficking of men, women, and children, and discrimination against persons with disabilities, racial and ethnic minorities, lesbian, gay, bisexual, transgender, and intersex persons, and persons with HIV/AIDS were problems in Zimbabwe. The government there interfered with labor-related events. Zimbabwe's government took limited steps to punish security sector officials and ZANU-PF supporters who committed violations, but impunity continued to be a problem. In the arena of human rights, every government has the ability to improve, including the United States, said Secretary of State John Kerry. He noted that the contents of the 2015 report renew our commitment to promoting and protecting universal human rights, to supporting and defending civil society in its peaceful efforts to hold governments accountable, and to working with our partners to advance peace, development, human rights, and democracy.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.